Check, 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 check. Guys, it's the Bon Appetit Foodcast. I'm Adam Rappaport. This week, are you ready for BA's best matzo ball soup recipe? Thanks to Molly Boz. She developed this recipe recently. Did all sorts of research, investigating, and tasting, and developing, and tasting again, and testing. She talked to me. She talked to my good friend, Mitchell Davis, Chief Strategy Officer of the James Beard Foundation, and a matzo ball soup aficionado, who actually joins us on this podcast to debate the finer points of the finest soup there is, matzo ball soup. After that, Associate Editor Hillary Cadigan reads her essay, "The Best Worst Takeout Counter Employee Suburban Boston Has Ever Seen," which is part of our ginormous Red Sauce America package that came out yesterday, both in the May issue of Bon Appetit and on bonappetit.com. You'll find all sorts of stories, essays, and recipes in the package, all of them in celebration of old-school Italian-American restaurants. You can read them by going to bonappetit.com/redsauce, or you can pick up the May issue of Bon Appetit. And with that, let's do this. Here is Molly Boz, Mitchell Davis, and me. Guys, can I admit something to you?
Uh-oh.
Go for it.
I'm a bad Jew. I have never made matzo ball soup before.
Are you freaking kidding me?
Maybe I'm a good Jew. I'm a nice Jewish boy, and that my mom is the one who makes it every single year, and you can't get in on that game. Like, Maxine is going to make her matzo ball soup, and that is that. It's not even open for discussion.
This is why you're never supposed to marry a nice Jewish boy.
Well, this makes me actually feel better about the fact that I was assigned to develop BA's best matzo ball soup, because I think, obviously, I'm not Jewish.
But neither is he.
I've never even made it.
I know. Probably had never done my laundry till I was like 24, you know?
Oh, jeez.
That's a whole other story.
Marry a wasp.
No, but you married a nice Jewish
boy. I married a Jew, I feel like I'm...
Okay, so this is good for you then, that you've been developing this recipe.
Yeah, and he's been tasting it along the way. The first round of it was not...
Oh, it's not up to his standards?
No, it wasn't right.
Interesting.
And I knew it.
What sort of feedback did he give you?
It wasn't chicken-y enough, the broth. Like, it wasn't chicken-forward. It tasted more of roasted vegetables in the first round because I had roasted the vegetables, which subsequently
which
I removed from the recipe.
Which no Jew has ever done, really.
Yeah. Well,
I remember making a chicken soup with a friend who was a chef from Mittel Europe. His name was Daniel Hutnick, and he...
Did you say Mittel Europe?
Yes, Mittel Europe.
Is that a big Game of Thrones thing or something? What is it?
No, that's Middle Earth, and it's a different genre of fantasy. That's the name of it. That's that region where...
Like
Poland
Hungary and Poland.
Yeah, all of those places.
Sure. Right.
Mittel Europe. Maybe it's a French word. Anyway, but he went to put garlic in, and I stopped him before it dropped because there was just never, ever any garlic or green pepper. Chicken soup is pretty pure in the Jewish Ashkenazi idiom. Oops.
There is garlic in the soup.
Interesting. Well, let's talk about that. So as far as I can tell, never having made matzo ball soup, you've got the broth itself.
Mm-hmm.
You have the matzo balls. And then you have the presentation and assemblage of the soup when it's time to serve. So let's start off with the broth. Molly, I'm curious what you did in terms of how you got to where you got. And Mitchell, I've had your matzo ball soup, which is memorable to say the least. And I'm curious how your guys' differ. So Molly, you want to start off?
It's a bummer I've never had his soup.
It's a bummer I didn't bring any.
Yeah,
I don't know what I was thinking. Although I've got a new soup now, and it's this is big news for me and everyone who knows me. But
a new matzo ball soup? Since we last spoke?
Yeah.
You changed the recipe.
Well, Friday I made a Yemenite chicken soup that was, according to a Polish woman who is not Jewish but who knows her way around soup, the most delicious soup she'd ever had in her life. And when I had it for leftovers last night for dinner, Nate, my husband, and I thought, I think this is our new soup.
Oh, my God.
I know.
Oh, jeez. I can't wait to hear about it.
Anyway.
Well, let's hear about Molly's first.
Okay. So we're talking broth
first.
So this recipe uses wings only for the broth.
Love that, because those
Six
are easy to
pounds
buy.
Pounds of wings.
Frugal in a Jewish kind of way.
Yes.
And frugal.
There's lots of collagen in the wings, so it gives the broth really good body. This actually sat over the weekend, and when it came in this morning, it was solid.
Nice. I love that.
That's gelatinous.
Yeah.
Last night when my soup was solid, I said, look, this is so cool. And my husband went, ugh.
And it wobbles. What does he know?
It's like
so exciting
jello.
When you're a soup.
I also like the fact that you can typically just buy a package of wings at the grocery store in the cellophane wrapped, and they're very accessible. You don't have to get like the feet and the backs and all that sort of stuff. Like, so just wings, 6 pounds.
6 pounds of wings, and this serves 8 people.
Okay.
And so my first tests, I did just wings and like classic mirepoix, so celery, carrot, onion. I used garlic and black peppercorns and some parsley. And the wings were unroasted. The vegetables were unroasted. So that was the first round. Mm-hmm. It felt lackluster. Mm. So the next round, I introduced some other vegetables. Thanks to you, I added parsnips. Mm. I think that you talked about parsnips or turnips.
Both, yeah.
I tried it with both, ended up with just parsnips. Mm-hmm. I think either of them would work fine. They kind of impart the same flavor.
Which is a bit of sweetness. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's also, it has like an earthy thing to it also. Second round, I ended up roasting everything because I wanted the flavors to be more prominent. So I roasted the wings and also the veg.
Separately though?
Separately on 2 sheet trays in the oven, same time.
Cool.
That stock,
like what temp and how long are we doing that for?
450 for like 45 to 55 minutes.
Okay. So for a while.
Yeah.
Sounds more French than Jewish, but okay.
Yeah. Well,
there's some French.
I come from some French kitchens.
Yeah, but they're having a difficult time right now.
Yeah.
And that version was too veg forward, and I think that's the version that I brought home to my husband, and he was like,
you roasted the veg, you think?
Yeah. So I roasted the veg, so the cooked off a lot of the water, caramelized them, concentrated them.
So those flavors got much more pronounced.
Yeah, and I wanted them ultimately to actually be background. So the final version here is roasted wings, raw veg.
Mm. Wow. Question. So when you roast all these wings on a sheet rack, A, do you salt them at all?
No.
No. B, what do you do with all the fat that collects?
It goes into the soup.
Save that for the soup and the matzo balls, if there's enough.
So you collect in what we call schmaltz.
Yes.
But you pour it off and set it aside?
So it kind of depends how you make the soup. I have them all the juices, because it's not just schmaltz that comes out. There's also just juice, and so you can't just consider that all schmaltz. So I have it all being poured into the stock, and then it's a pretty fatty, unctuous soup if you eat it just like right after it's cooked. If you leave it over the weekend, which I did this weekend, you can then skim the fat because it congeals.
If you want to.
So I skimmed some of it, but I left a lot of it in here for this one because I think it's flavor.
The Italians call those little beads of fat on the top of a soup, the occhi, the eyes.
Oh, I love those. Yeah,
there should be some schmaltzy occhi in this.
I love how those look. So you've got your tray of nicely browned wings and all the juice and the schmaltz, the schmutz. You just pour that in a big stock pot with the vegetables.
Yep.
Cover with. I know one thing I always screw up with. I'm a bad soup maker. I just don't have the touch, and I feel like I always get the ratio of water to bone/vegetable wrong. I feel like I always add too much water, and so it's not concentrated enough. Like, how much do you, how do you know what to add, Molly?
Well, this has a measured amount of water in the recipe. So it's 16 cups, 4 quarts of water, with the understanding that over the hour and a half that it's cooking, it's going to reduce a bit, and it's going to net out at about 12 cups, which is 1.5 cups per serving if you're serving 8 people.
Okay, top off. When your boy was simmering.
Yeah.
The beauty of simmering is you can also reduce it more and add a little water or whatever.
You can taste it as it goes.
Sure.
So, Mitchell, at this point,
I don't know what she's making.
Wow. Did you hear that, Molly?
Oh, I heard it.
Molly's eyes are agog right now. So what's going on in the Davis recipe?
I'm sure it's delicious and it smells really good, I have to say that. But mostly that's the smell of dill and that the chicken-y. I love the idea of chicken forward. But when I think of the roasted, I'm curious to taste it, because when I think of roasted chicken, it's a different thing from the taste of soup. So first, I always start with a stewing hen, which is an old bird that you either have to order specially from a butcher, or if you go to a Latin American market, they always have them, which I just, you know, kudos to the Latin American cooks who know the difference. So it's a chicken you wouldn't eat or roast. It usually has mangy, small stringy breasts, if I can say that, and can be yellowish too, in a way that chickens aren't anymore. They used to be, but now they're all so white.
Yeah.
So, and I use the feet always for some of that gelatinous flavor. And I've never roasted a chicken or cooked anything before it went in the pot. And I don't even mostly ever skim, or some people boil the meat and a few of the aromatics and then add everything else. And in our family, it just all went in at once.
So pots, onions, carrots.
Everything, celery.
Do you chop up the chicken first?
Just in quarters, really.
Okay.
Yeah. And I also always keep backs and wing tips and things in the freezer, and those go in, and the gizzard goes in, and the neck goes in, and everything goes in.
Mm.
Yeah.
So, and you simmer for about how long?
3 hours.
Oh, 3 hours.
Yeah.
So this is an hour and a half. And I think that, but the
roasting probably brings the flavor out.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's like concentrating the flavor. So if you factor that into the total cook time, it's about 2.5 hours.
And obviously at the end of 3 hours, but the chicken and the vegetables are sort of dead. And I usually take them out and sort of cook a garnish afterwards of veg rather than eat the
Instead of like mushy carrots, you want fresh carrots.
Before it goes in the garbage, I kind of pick them out because I love them. Yeah. Falling apart mushy carrots and celery and the chicken bits. But
So then that's an interesting point. So you've got this mangy old stewing hen. It's spent. Mm-hmm. You're getting rid of it after the broth process. Molly, are you adding new chicken meat to the broth after it's been cooked? What's that process for you?
So halfway through the simmering of the broth, I'm dropping in 4 seasoned chicken legs.
Skin on?
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's doubling down on chicken flavor.
Smart.
That is being imparted into the broth. And then
unroasted.
Also unroasted. Yeah. And then leaving you with super tender, shreddy leg meat, because there's nothing I hate more than overcooked breast meat in matzo ball soup.
Just no flavor.
There's no breast.
Dry.
Here. Yeah.
My new soup has those legs.
The Yemenite
soup.
There
you go.
Yes.
We're coming together. Yeah.
It's got legs. So that's interesting. So Maxine Rappaport, every Passover, which we're coming up on in a few days, so she never puts chicken in there. It's the broth. It's the matzo balls. It's the fresh
dill. We actually didn't traditionally either. The chicken, because it was this spent, overcooked hen, went into chicken salad for lunch.
I would like. I don't think you necessarily. If you're having a meal like at Passover where there's multiple courses and you got the chicken marbella or something coming next, I don't think
the
you
traditional
necessarily
Passover chicken marbella.
Boz and I you can watch our pork marbella video on YouTube,
which is super kosher for Passover.
Exactly.
There's no flour in it anyway.
You don't really need chicken in your matzo ball soup when you're having all this other food, but I do like the notion of chicken in matzo ball soup if that's your that's your meal.
Totally. Agreed. And if you are making this around the holidays and you don't want the chicken legs, you can proceed with the recipe without dropping those in.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, it'll still be flavorful.
And here's the only thing I'll say in favor of the stringy breast meat, which is if you put noodles in and there's some big pieces of dill and you sort of take a spoonful and it kind of makes a little tangle of all that stuff, it's pretty
it's passable.
Passoverable.
You're also the guy you just admitted you're basically eating the mushy vegetables out of the garbage.
I am.
And you use a mangy hen.
You should open a pub called the Mangy Hen.
It's probably taken.
Okay, so we've got this golden, deep golden. How would you describe the color of your broth, Molly?
Let me take a look.
Okay, yeah. It's a nice golden brown. It's not like a deep, sort of, it's not that consommé color. It's not that.
It was originally amber. When I had all of the roasted veg in it. It was super dark, but so much so that you couldn't really see the chicken or the vegetables in it.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's not iconic enough.
No,
it goes more French.
Traditionally, people leave onion skins on to make it yellow.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I've heard that.
Like Second Avenue Deli, I'm convinced, has onion skins in their soup.
Yeah, that's like neon yellow almost. Okay, so we got this broth, smells delicious. Again, I've never made a matzo ball, so I don't even know. I know my moms are nice and not too dense, but they have enough body. Like, Mitchell, talk to us about matzo balls and getting that texture that you want to get. And what do you think the correct texture of a matzo ball is?
Yeah, I like matzo balls to be light and cooked through. And when I was working years ago now, 15 years ago or more, on a Jewish cookbook, I tried to scientifically determine what made them dense or light so that I could provide a recipe for each, to please the eater, so to speak. I failed miserably, and in fact, one famous matzo ball, someone tried to cut with a knife, and it literally bounced out of the bowl. It was so dense, let's say. So I just stuck with my mom's, which is a variant of what's on the box, compensating for her poor measuring skills and her inability sometimes to even read clearly while she was cooking and smoking and talking on the phone at the same time. So we used to think ashes and a few rubber bands were the secret to her chicken soup. But so to me, the secret is to use schmaltz for starters, and if not schmaltz, then butter. If we're not caring about kosher things, and most Jews use oil, which is parv, and it makes a leaden matzo ball, I think. And then a higher proportion of eggs than you might see in some recipes, and to handle them gently, I think, is the thing that determines whether they become floaters or sinkers, at least in my experience. And people want to ball them and roll them like they're making meatballs and whatever, and I barely coax them into a sphere.
Well, we always talk about that when grilling burgers or making burgers. You don't want to pack it. You just want to shape the burger as loosely as possible and don't press down on it and don't condense it. Let it hold together just enough. So, Molly, talk to us through yours, and does this jibe with what Mitchell said?
This does not jibe.
Oh, my God, the two of you.
But I think that makes for good conversation. Okay, so I pretty systematically went through all of the variables. Mm-hmm. So does yours have baking powder in it, by the way?
Mm-mm.
Okay. So I tested these out always with schmaltz. Some of them had seltzer in them for additional lightness and lift. Some of them had baking powder. Some of them had none. And then varying degrees of all of those ingredients. And then I also tested it out with beating egg whites separately and folding them in, which is kind of arduous and
very French.
Also very French. Yes.
So so just walk us through the process. Again, I've literally never made matzo ball. So what goes in?
Okay, so
matzo meal.
You start with beaten eggs.
Okay, beaten eggs.
So this has six whole eggs, this recipe, and it makes 16 balls. Six whole eggs beaten. It has a half a cup of schmaltz, which is a higher ratio than you'll see like on the back of the matzo meal box, for example, because there's so much flavor in schmaltz, and it's what gives them all of their flavor.
And you can find schmaltz these days at a lot of good markets in the refrigerated section.
Yeah. Or you can use duck fat. You can use it.
It's
duck
not
fat,
that hard
chicken
to come
fat.
By.
You'll find it.
Yeah. So a half a cup of schmaltz. It has a couple tablespoons of chopped dill in it.
Nice.
That was just an addition, a little fancy addition. Some black pepper, not a ton, just a little bit. A good amount of salt. There's nothing worse than an under-seasoned matzo ball.
Agreed.
And then six tablespoons of broth, chicken broth or water. Mm. I notice that when you're using schmaltz, there's so much flavor coming from that. The broth versus the water like really doesn't make that much of a difference. But if you're already making soup and you have the broth, you might as well throw it in there. And then 1.5 cups of matzo meal.
Explain matzo meal to those who have not handled matzo meal.
It is finely ground matzo.
Akin to breadcrumbs, kind of, or
very.
So it has it's from the cooked matzah, so it has no gluten qualities. So it's like a breadcrumb, cracker crumb.
So you literally just stir all that together.
You fold it all together. You let it sit for, in my recipe, 35 to 45 minutes, and it the matzah meal hydrates, and it goes from this batter-like consistency to something that is formable into balls.
Oh. Yeah,
near solid, because the schmaltz also hardens. Right?
Totally, as it chills.
All right, so your thoughts on forming the ball and what size ball?
Wait, hold on.
Oh,
I'm not done here. We didn't get to the bottom of the whole seltzer, baking powder, or none conversation. And in all of the tests that we ate side by side, we all preferred the texture of the balls that had no seltzer, no baking powder, and were pretty well-handled balls.
Okay.
Hmm. I would have thought the baking powder would be one of those things that makes it lighter and
airier. They were too light. They were so light that they ended up kind of just unraveling into the soup, and we felt like...
Too dainty.
Yeah. We wanted something with like a little bit more substance.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't call them dense.
I don't... So far, I don't really seem to disagree, except for the handling. Maybe you're more delicate in your handling.
So what size are you making, and how do you form them?
So mine are 1.5 inches when
uncooked.
Of uncooked matzo meal mixture, and then that expands to like 2.5 inches.
So what size? What would you? What sort of ball would you compare it to?
They're like between a golf ball and a tennis ball.
Like maybe like a Spalding, like one of the stick balls, the orange.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, not the orange, the pink, you know, rubber balls your dad would play stick ball with back in Brooklyn.
I never played that game.
No, I didn't have a dad.
Dan Rappaport would play the stick ball back in Flushing, Queens, where he grew up. And then
I'm rolling them pretty well so that they're spherical when you drop them in. If you don't, which is what Mitchell does, they're a little bit shaggier and a little less shapely.
Although they're spheres.
So
maybe it's more than I'm saying. Because I do know
I'm
a family.
I'm doing like this motion, which you guys can't see, but.
We're both, with wet hands sort of.
Yeah.
They go in round, but not like compressed.
Do you know anyone who does like a quenelle or anything like that?
No, but where I will be spending Passover at our friends, the Gottliebs on the Upper East Side, they like them to be like sludgy mush on the bottom of the bowl. If they come out, they cut them all up, but so they really do fall apart. They're sort of just scooped in. And
do you know anyone who ever uses like an ice cream scoop, you know, with the little
thing? I tried that actually after our conversation.
And it comes out?
Yeah, because Mitchell was saying when we spoke on the phone before I started developing that he found the less handled they were, the better the texture. And so I thought, why not use an ice cream scoop where you're basically not handling them at all? And they just fell apart.
Okay. Yeah. So maybe it's just the words that are wrong. The recipe and what you describe sound like my
matzo bowl. So final question before we taste Molly soup, because I'm starving right now. It's about 12:15 p.m. Does it matter when you actually drop the matzo balls into the soup? In terms of, can they overcook? Talk me through that.
Well, you don't cook them in the soup. I don't cook them in the soup. You cook them in boiling salted water.
Jeez, Adam. Get with the program.
I've never done this.
Because that will make a sort of cloudy, icky soup.
Oh, the broth.
So you cook them outside the soup in salted water till they almost double in size and cook all the way through. And then you lift them from the water into the hot soup. At least that's what I do. And they sort of stay there till you're ready to serve them.
So what if you're making soup ahead of time, a couple of days ahead of time? Will you put them in the broth or would you?
I do, but
separate?
I always actually bring the broth up to temperature because I make the matzo balls before the guests come, a couple hours maybe.
Yeah.
But I heat the soup and then put them in the hot soup and then let it cool and then heat it again to serve it. That's what I do.
Yeah. The other thing about cooking them separately is that you can heavily season the cooking water, which is seasoning the matzo balls as they're cooking. If you cook them in the soup and you were to season it enough to season the matzo balls, the soup would then be too salty.
And what we always talk about, you want your pasta water to be really salty so it imbues the pasta with saltiness. Yep. All right, enough talk. Let's take a quick break and serve ourselves some Molly soup.
Are we going to slurp on?
I think so.
Yeah, we're going. We're going to slurp. All right, so we got Molly soup. Slurp on air.
Oh, wow. That's a real slur.
Well, if you're going to do it. That's quite good broth.
It's delicious.
All right, now I just did it without slurping.
Beautiful texture on these balls, so to speak.
All right.
Let's talk about the broth first. Mitchell, what is your broth assessment?
The broth is totally yummy. It's nicely salted.
Yeah, it's salted with... I would say it's salty without being overly salty.
Yeah, exactly. Just on the edge, but where it should be for
also,
a Jewish meal.
Also, if we can be candid, if you celebrate Passover with some of your older Jewish relatives, their salt levels are typically about twice as high as yours, or salt tolerance levels are. So you gotta salt it well.
Yep.
I think I have the tolerance of that.
That category. That geriatric.
totally geriatric palate.
No disrespect to Maxine, but the texture on the matzo balls is spectacular.
Nice.
I feel like it holds itself together really well. Mm-hmm. Sometimes with some of those matzo balls, you get to the middle and it gets so dense, you've got to like literally push down to get through it. I feel like this one, the spoon glides through the matzo ball.
Totally.
It still maintains
its shape.
It's still
sort of pillowy. Its flavor is really good. Also nicely salted. I think this... What is the name of this recipe?
BA's best matzo ball soup.
Well, I haven't had all the others, but it certainly is delicious.
I think and you get the little droplets of fat.
Any booby would be proud to serve this.
And also fresh dill, which I think we all agree is an excellent addition just before you surface. You sprinkle it on top.
Yeah, and the meat from those legs that were not overcooked is still sort of juicy and chickeny. It's really good.
Thank you.
So good. And Molly, so just before we let you go, I think especially if you're hosting Passover, a lot of pressure, people coming over, you got this multi-part meal. Your advice in terms of doing this ahead of time and how far ahead and storage and that and whatnot?
I wrote it into the recipe more or less so that you can be making the stock and making the matzo balls simultaneously in advance and then poaching them. And if you, I actually have you storing them not in the soup because I don't want the salt levels from inside the balls to come out into the soup through osmosis.
So, like on Friday, you made the matzo balls. How do you store the matzo balls?
I made the matzo balls this morning.
Okay. But
I
made the
soup
stock.
And
you just put that like in a plastic container.
I just kept it in here.
Oh, in the stock pot,
in the
fridge.
I strained it back into here, shredded the chicken legs back into the soup, seasoned it, and then threw it in the fridge.
I'm noting the great little collagen gelatinous thing on my lips that's making my lips stick together.
Oh, I thought you were saying I had like a piece of dill on
no,
my lip.
No,
you're pointing to your lips.
My lips are sticking together in a really fun, delicious
lip
way.
Lip smacking.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It's like, who needs lip balm when you have a like schmaltz?
So yeah, you could make all of it in advance and then you just reheat the balls in the soup. I just wouldn't recommend storing them in the soup for days on end because the seasoning will get all wacky.
Okay, so this is delicious. It's really good. It's got me excited for Passover. What's the recipe? If you can look for it on the BA site, which you can.
It'll be called BA's Best Matzo Ball Soup. It will definitely be out by the time this podcast airs.
Molly Boz's recipe for BA's Best Matzo Ball Soup will be live on bonapita.com. So happy Passover, Mitchell Davis.
Yeah, good yontif to everybody.
Good yontif. Happy Passover, Molly.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Lale Arakoglu, host of Women Who Travel. Each story from our guests and listeners is totally unique and utterly personal. We love hearing about your first impressions when visiting someplace new.
My first trip to the Patagonia region was on the Argentine side. I couldn't believe the expansive territory. It's like being in Tibet. The emptiness and the harshness really, I found transformative.
Or a story told when safely back on dry land.
You know, things happened every single day. I ran out of gas on a jet ski in the middle of the ocean. And I was like, what if a sea creature comes to eat me? But then I'm delusional. I was like, I'll make friends with it and it won't eat me. And maybe I'll ride that back to shore.
That's how it works.
Yeah.
Join me, Lale Arakoglu, every week for more adventures on Women Who Travel, wherever you listen to your podcasts.
It started with the rolls. That's what they tasked all the noobs with on day one at Bertucci's. Pull the giant white plastic containers full of perforated dough slabs from the walk-in, carry them to the flour splotch counter in the back of the open kitchen, pull them apart, and plop them, one by one, onto a baking sheet. When you first learned to plop rolls, you were careful, until eventually you realized it didn't really matter if you left fingerprints or plopped them too close, or even if you made them into a star shape instead of a ball. They'd puff up exactly the same anyway. Interiors warm and soft, exteriors round and crusty. And if they did end up fusing into one big giant mega roll, well, that meant you got to eat a free snack furtively behind the dumpster with a plate of stolen pizza sauce for dipping. And you could invite Chase, the private school coworker you were in love with, to eat with you and earn his respect by mercilessly making fun of your manager Brent and his too tight pants. I began working the takeout counter at Bertucci's the summer after my junior year of high school. I'd spent the previous summer as a lifeguard at the local country club, testing urine to chlorine ratios, pretending to keep my eyes open behind my sunglasses, eating free chicken fingers from the snack bar, and occasionally getting an entire paid day off because somebody pooped in the kiddie pool and all the pools were connected by one central underground pump. Being a lifeguard was pretty sweet, in other words, but I didn't get asked back, which is the country club way of saying you're fired. So there I was, with the rolls. Located just down the street from my suburban Boston public high school, my Bertucci's was one of several dozen iterations of the family-friendly red sauce chain. It beat the Olive Garden in seniority by 1 year, 1981 baby, but never expanded past Virginia, thus retaining a decidedly New England deficit in mass market sheen. The ceilings were high, and the walls were fake stucco, painted the color of old salmon and dotted with black and white posters of Sicilian men riding bicycles. The soundtrack was one scratch CD over and over, featuring strummy guitar versions of every quintessential Italian song, plus, for some reason, the Teddy Bear's Picnic. Days at the takeout counter went like this. Come in wearing the same black shirt-pant combo as yesterday, make the rolls, wait for the phone to ring, ignore Chase in an effort to mask your desperation, plug orders into the POS system, Try not to get accidentally on purpose branded by a hot paddle when the cooks pulled pizza from the brick oven. Cut said pizzas into reasonably similar sized slices. Put an olive in the middle as a symbol of hospitality and perfection, our gift to you. Then wait for people to come pick them up and give you somewhere between $0 and $2 as a tip. One of the best things about working takeout at the Tooch was that we got to bring home any orders that didn't get picked up by the end of the night. Not one to miss out on a perfectly good opportunity, I'd have my friend Olivia call in fake orders and usually leave each night with at least two mysteriously unclaimed pizzas. Also not one to be discreet about anything, I told the entire takeout team about my scam, and for several weeks we were all pizza flush. Then one night Brent noticed the dozen unclaimed pizzas left on the to-go rack, took them out back, and, as we all watched in horror, individually stomped on each one and threw them in the dumpster. That was the end of free pizza. The pizza scheme was not the reason I got fired from my job at Bertucci's. The reason I got fired from my job at Bertucci's was that one weekend I happened to be in Martha's Vineyard with my best girlfriend Harms when suddenly my Nokia flip phone began to ring. I flipped, and who should it be but Chase? Oh boy! Where are you? He said, and I got very excited until I realized he was asking because I was supposed to be at Bertucci's. Brent came on the phone next and screamed, I don't give a shit where you are, but if you don't walk in this door in 10 minutes, you are fired. Well, Brent, I said, I'm in Martha's Vineyard, so that time window is not looking doable right now. You're fired, said Brent, and hung up. But you know what? 3 days later, I showed up for my next shift like nothing happened, and that is how I got myself unfired from Bertucci's. At Bertucci's, meatballs are listed on the menu as polpette, meatballs, in parentheses. I always pronounce them like that thing from which a preacher preaches, a pulpit, and nobody ever corrected me. We also served many types of pasta, none of which I ever learned to properly identify, except tortellini. Despite all that, and the pizza scheme, and the firing, by the summer after my sophomore year of college, I'd finally graduated from takeout counter worker to waitress, where the real money was. Suddenly I was somebody. People would ask me what they should order, which struck me as a very hilarious thing to do because of how tips work. I would always suggest a bistecca, which is Italian for steak, and some sautéed mussels, and a glass, hell, why not a bottle, let's live, of Kendall Jackson Vintner's Reserve. I'd done the math. Then one day, when a lady took my advice, my hand slipped, and suddenly time froze as I slow motion dumped an entire pan of sautéed mussel juice down the back of her shirt. And that was the end of recommending the mussels. As the summers wore on, I eventually won over Chase, the private school swashbuckler, at least enough to ride around in his Jeep and make out to dispatch songs while he told me all the reasons he couldn't commit to a relationship. It didn't work out, in the end, but a few years later, my mom saved his mom at the gym after she fell off a treadmill. So there's that. I think he works for Google now. And the Tooch itself? Well, almost exactly a year ago, the branch I worked at shut down. Something about rent was the official statement, but my mom has other ideas. Kids just don't work, she says. It's the new thing. Apparently, they all spend their summers doing fancy internships or building structurally questionable schools in Southeast Asia or becoming Instagram influencers or whatever. Working at Bertucci's? No longer cool. But you know what? Joke's on them. Because who now gets paid to write about food? Me. And I owe it all to Bertucci's.
The Bon Appetit Foodcast is produced by Carrie Polis and Christina Che, and produced and edited by Emma Wortsman. Our theme music is by Nathaniel Wortsman. We have new episodes every Wednesday, and if you want to tell us about this or any other episode, email us at bonappetitfoodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.